Milwaukee. Start your engines. It's time to talk about all things racing. NASCAR, IndyCar, trucks, and Formula One. This is the Final Inspection Show with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Now, it's Final Inspection on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Here's Steve Zocchi.
Hey, welcome to the Final Inspection Show. It is Steve Zocchi, and of course, joining me in studio, it is the Polish Pipe Bomb, Jeff Orlowski.
Good to be back with you. Had a little vacation, so it's nice being back in the hot seat.
It's good to have you here. Of course, Final Inspection Show brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway. Make sure you get to greatlakesdragway.com. 62 years going strong, thanks to all their loyal fans. And prepare for the 2018 season by going to their website and buying a season pass. Make sure you do that. And, of course, I'd like to thank David Hobbs Honda. Make sure you check out DavidHobbsHonda.com. Visit David Hobbs Honda for quality selection of vehicles, uncompromising customer service, professional maintenance and repairs from a team you can trust. That's David Hobbs Honda. So, Jeff Orlowski.
Yes.
Texas.
NASCAR.
Texas NASCAR. We had cold weather. What's the coldest you've seen a race in?
Back in the days when I was growing up and I used to go to Santa Fe Speedway a lot.
Oh, south side of Chicago, yes.
Yeah, that place was fantastic. There were a couple times there that... oh, man. You know, it was it turned into a long night because it was freezing. But, you know, I don't have any sympathy for them down in Texas. Let them enjoy some of the Wisconsin weather for a change.
48 degrees when the green flag flew down in Texas last week. I remember a couple races. The 1978 Super America 150 in the first week in May. That was the first ASA American Speed Association stock car race at the Milwaukee Mile, won by Bob Seneker, Mark Martin, a young 18-year-old Mark Martin on the pole.
Nice.
And that was cold. That was probably 55 degrees, heavy winter coat, long underwear I think we had on, and we were still cold, sitting in the south turn one bleachers. Another one I remember, 1979 Rex Mays 150 in June. That was more damp. Okay. That was probably 60 degrees, maybe, but it was damp. It was just one of those miserable where it wasn't raining, but it was moist. Just that, ugh. And then, of course, the infamous 1992 Miller 200 IndyCar race at Milwaukee. That wasn't damp, but that was just darn cold. That was, I don't think it got above 45 degrees. And it was interesting because that was also the race at the Indy 500 the week before. It was also cold. So it was cold the whole week. I remember we actually left Indianapolis on that Saturday, and we were in shorts and T-shirts. It was fantastic. It was like 75, 80 degrees. We got in the minivan that we rented, and all of us dummies went up I-65, and we stopped somewhere north of Lafayette, got out at the wayside, whatever you call them.
Mm-hmm. Rest stop or whatever.
And we're like, holy cow, what the heck happened here? It was freezing. And a cold front went through, and it was downright miserable. It was just, and sure enough, the next race at the next week at Milwaukee, it was also cold. So give those fans credit for showing up. I mean, you know, sitting out there, you know, it's rough watching a race like that in the weather. I guess, you know, it's one thing when you're a dumb, you know, 19-year-old kid, you know, it's fun. But as you get older.
Yeah, as you get older, you know, the hotter, the better. You know, you sweat out a lot of beer, but, you know, it's a lot more comfortable being hot at a race than it is being cold.
But Kyle Busch, of course, winning the race, not a surprise. He's been running pretty good, hasn't he, lately?
Yeah, he has, and obviously he had a fantastic car. I still think the most dominant car was Kevin Harvick, but he just had one thing go wrong after another on, like, five pit stops. And, you know, some of it was pit guns again. What about that lug nut that got, you know, caught in the jack?
Right. I'm surprised that doesn't really happen more often.
Yeah,
those things
too.
Are flying all over the place.
Oh, you know? I know. Yeah. I know. But, you know, Harvick had the car to beat. But, you know, Kyle Busch had a fantastic car and deserved
to
win.
Did you like the slow motion of the... of the guns and the nuts coming off the bolts and everything.
I did. I thought that was a cool shot. I thought they did a good job of, of having that footage and slowing it down so you could see exactly what happened. I loved it.
That was pretty cool. I must give them credit for that. You know, they'll surprise you. But, Kyle Busch. All right, his wife in Victory Lane. Does she irritate you?
Yes, but everything about Kyle Busch irritates me. So, you know, I'm completely biased. It's not I don't have an unbiased.
She's the ultimate stereotypical race driver wife, isn't she?
Oh, of course she is.
She loves being a race driver's wife.
Oh, yeah.
She is, you know. What's your dream job?
Who, me?
You.
Well, I would love to have a national sports talk show.
That would be your dream job.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's what you, when you were laying on your bed as a teenager, that's what you were thinking of?
Well, no. When I was a teenager,
I wanted to be an astronaut or something.
I wanted to, you know, play in the NFL. I wanted, you know.
Yeah, everybody has that, yeah.
Yeah, all that stuff. None of which was ever attainable.
See, even me and my buddy, we were like, yeah, we want to play in the NFL, but we're like, we're realists. We're not going to, what? You know, maybe as a punter. So we wore out our leg for like 2 days, you know, punting because we're going to be punters, and then that faded away. But she was 8-10 years old, she wanted to be a race car driver's wife.
Yeah,
Mrs. Kurt Busch.
Well, she fits perfect with him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that.
Did you see one of my favorite memes ever about her?
What?
About her aftermarket alteration. That is the all-time. That's top five material right there.
Nice. I'm going to have to look that up right now.
If you look that up, yeah. If you're online, Kurt Busch, just enter in Kurt Busch playthings, and you will find it on Google. And you will be giggling all to yourself, and people will be looking at you. And we got Bristol this week. I know we're kind of pushing things up ahead here, but
yeah, you
Bristol,
know,
getting back to the show I did last weekend while you were traveling around the world, we were focusing on Alan Kulwicki, and you know, for a good 10 years, I hated this race. I used to love Bristol too. I loved it. It was top three race. You know, I always loved Daytona in February because it's the first race, you know, but Bristol I always liked, especially I liked it because Alan won there twice, but after April 1st, 1993, I hated that track because that's where he was going.
Yeah.
And it was like, if he didn't have to go there. But anyways, thanks again to Ryan Eversley, Russ Lake, and everybody that helped out last week. It really was a really cool show, like I said, for me. It was kind of a cleansing. It was a very cleansing show for me because for many, many years, I just didn't really talk much about Alan. I kind of kept all that stuff to myself. And, it was very, very, very difficult for me to talk about it. And I kind of felt good last week doing that show. Kind of
fantastic show. I learned a ton.
After 25 years, you know, I figured it was time. So... And
it's good to get that weight off your shoulders. And like I said, it was fantastic. I learned a lot about Alan Kulwicki that I did not know, and about, you know, the different stock car series and stuff like that.
Well, and check out Dinner with Racers. There's the video that you can find on Racer, featured videos that they did that kind of encapsulates the whole thing. But the podcasts are really neat because they're broken down in different areas. And there's a couple of cool things. There's actually some stuff on there I didn't even know about. One thing that I didn't know about was that, and actually now that I think back though, I think I did mention it, but it was backed up by Tom Roberts, who was on there, and that Alan was actually plane shopping.
Nice.
And he was thinking about getting a plane. And the other thing, they had a choice of two planes. They had the Fairchild, the prop plane that he was killed on, and a Learjet.
Wow.
And Alan, they were on a trip a couple weeks before, and they really liked the Lear for obvious reasons. It's a Learjet and
everything. Of course.
And he goes, wow, this really wouldn't be a bad place or a bad way to go. You mentioned the Tom.
Wow.
That puts a chill up your spine.
Yes, it does.
But make sure you check out Dinner with Racers podcast. It's good if you're a fan of Alan Kowicki. It's good cleansing for the soul. It some of it's kind of hard to listen to, but it kind of really brings the memories, bad memories, back. But then again, it's kind of cleansing, and it's good to know it's history. And we need to remember Alan Kowicki. I tell you what, let's talk Bristol in the next break, after this break here, and we'll talk more about what's coming up, and we'll actually revisit a couple subjects from Texas. You're listening to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. Welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. Make sure to check out greatlakesdragway.com for your 2018 season passes. And also our friends at David Hobbs Honda, make sure to check out the latest in new and used cars from David Hobbs Honda. And, of course, last week, Texas, Kyle Busch, his first win of the season. And Jamie McMurray, how about that, finishing third. We're not super fans of Jamie McMurray, but we definitely think he's one of the most overlooked drivers in the series.
Every year, he's like the silent assassin. He makes the playoffs. He doesn't really always, get out of the first or second round, but he's consistent, 10 to 15 area week in, week out.
He'll get every a win now once and in a while, and he'll surprise you. Could say he is running for Ganassi. He's not running for a Penske, a Hendrick, or Joe Gibbs,
Yeah, he's got talent. You can't deny it. And he's not up front as much as he, obviously wants to be. But yes, he's one heck of a driver.
Of course, that was his best finish of the season. And then the aforementioned Kevin Harvick was second. Eric Jones finishing fourth, and Ryan Blaney finishing fifth. Ryan Blaney, who also won the Xfinity race the previous day. So not a bad weekend for Ryan Blaney, who's actually been running quite well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. But I want to talk about Eric Jones. He led a bunch of laps at Texas, and it was, I think it's good for his confidence for him to get out front and lead some laps. Hopefully he can sit there and build on that and turn it into a week-in, week-out thing instead of a once every eight races, have a really good run.
Yeah, and he is in a new car this year, kind of. Not totally new car, but, he's running in the former Matt Kenseth car, some new guys there, and it's going to take a while for the team to kind of gel. And
absolutely,
I think if you're Joe Gibbs, you want to see some signs of improvement, and that was definitely a sign from Eric Jones last week.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. So hopefully this speeds up the gelling process with his team, and he can keep it up.
And Kyle Busch, who has run strong all year, of course, is leading the points, which don't really matter anymore. But for those interested, Kyle Busch leads the point standings, followed by Joey Logano, which is kind of surprising. Ryan Blaney, who's, like I said, been running strong. Kevin Harvick, of course, who's been up front all year. And Martin Truex.
Yeah, Truex, he's kind of doing it quietly this year. He got knocked out, hit a DNF at Texas. But he's still going to be a force to be reckoned with come playoff time, come end of the season. don't overlook the 78.
No, don't. And, of course, the Xfinity race was Ryan Blaney winning over Christopher Bell. And then followed by Daniel Hemric, Cole Custer, and Ryan Preece. And winning the ARCA race last week, it was Zane Smith. Speaking of ARCA, we're going to talk to Jim Tradel of the ARCA series coming up in the next segment. So make sure you stick around for Jim Tratto, who you can see on Fox Sports 1. Of course, was my boss at the Milwaukee Mile, so I'm certainly looking forward to chatting with Jim on that. We'll talk a little ARCA coming up here in the next segment. And, of course, this week we have Bristol and the Food City 500, 500 laps of fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, when you think of Bristol, one of the drivers you think of is DW.
Yeah.
He's more than just an old guy on Fox, you know. Between 1981 and 1984, he won 7 races.
Wow.
That's pretty good. And that streak was halted in August 1984 by another NASCAR Hall of Famer, Terry Labonte. And, of course, when you think of Terry Labonte, you don't necessarily think of him breaking Darrell Waltrip's streak, but you think of the 2 epic races and battles he had with Dale Earnhardt. Remember those?
I do.
I was just trying to rattle his cage.
Terry was great, man. Terry was fantastic.
And of course, so we're coming to Bristol. They repaved it. They made 2 grooves. So it was easy to pass and everybody hated it.
Yeah. I know. They give the fans what they wanted because for years you couldn't pass at Bristol. And it was,
unless you were banging.
Yeah, and it was boring. And then they sit there and make 2 grooves. There's passing's a lot easier, and everybody hates it. I don't understand it. I will tell you now, my wish for this weekend is, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about what a huge letdown Martinsville was and how there was no rivalries that came out. There was very little ill feelings except, you know, Harvick brake-checking Hamlin. So very little happened in that Monday Martinsville race. I want fireworks at Bristol, man. I want it to set up a good, like, 6 to 8 week run where, you know, oh, is payback coming this week? Is payback coming this week? That's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay. And the driver, of course, has high hopes as a guy who won there, although it's been a few years, is Casey Kane. Now, I see you guys laugh. And I said, of course, he left the 5 car, which is now the 24 car. But, you know, the 95 car, if you look, is making little baby steps and is getting better and better. However, so far this year, their best finish is 17th. So I'm thinking Casey Kane can better that. It wouldn't surprise me if he got a top 10 this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, he can get top 10. I don't think he's going to be competing for the win, but he can definitely possibly maybe
but
get a top 10.
Who else could kind of say, oh, well, you did pretty well. Ricky Stenhouse, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, Stenhouse. I wouldn't be surprised if William Byron, he, I think, finished 10th at Texas. I wouldn't be surprised if he has another good run.
Kyle Larson.
Well, of course.
I think, and Kyle Busch, of course.
Well, yeah, both the Busch brothers. You know, Harvick will be up there. I think, you know, Truex will be up there. You know, a lot of the same cast of characters. I mean, I'm more interested in, you know, how's Bubba Wallace going to do? You know, how's Eric Jones? Can he follow up his good finish last week with another nice run?
And he's had good runs at Bristol.
Yeah, he has. He has. So I think it'll be a fun race. I think, you know, I hope that, like I said, we get some rivalries, we get some hot-blooded action going on. But I hope that we get, as much as the racing, I think, is going to be real fantastic in the middle of the pack, hopefully we get that same intensity at the front of the pack.
All right, and of course you got the Xfinity Series racing now, Saturday.
Yep.
And but don't switch over. And so I don't know. Should we do picks now?
Sure.
Who's your pick for? Let's just do Cup.
I'm taking Bad Brad, man. He's had some bad luck.
Okay, that's a good
and
pick.
I think that, you know, he'll throw anybody in the wall to get this monkey off his back. You know, he's due for a good day.
All right.
And I think if he's not having a good day, he's going to make it a good day.
I'll go with Kyle Larson.
All right.
Because it's about time.
It is. That's a good pick.
You are listening to the Final Inspection Show brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway. Make sure to check out greatlakesdragway.com. Get your season pass for the 2018 season. And, of course, David Hobbs Honda. Make sure you check out for all the finest in new and used cars at David Hobbs, and they have an award-winning service.
A dealer for the people.
A dealer for the people. Coming up next, it is Jim Tradel from Fox Sports 1. Man of, he's been everywhere. Phoenix, Daytona, he's the everywhere man. I'm looking forward to this. So coming up next, Jim Tradel on the Final Inspection Show.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi. Presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove. On 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda. And joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, it is Jim Tradel. Jim Tradel, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you having on. Our history goes back a few years, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've known you for quite a while. And most recently, we worked together as you were the official historian of the Milwaukee Mile back in the day.
And I certainly appreciate that. And that was a lot of fun. And hopefully we can get the band back together, as they say.
Let's try. Never stop saying try.
And I get some people come up to me, hey, what's Jim doing? And you've been keeping pretty busy. You actually get to travel, not the complete series, but you're doing traveling to most of the NASCAR Monster Cup races, aren't you?
You know, I've had the good fortune of doing a lot of things while being working in Milwaukee full-time, getting to travel. My current role for the sixth year now is going to a lot of the NASCAR Cup tracks. So, for example, at Phoenix International Raceway, now ISM Raceway, I am the at-track screen host. So you see me on the Jumbotron, you hear me on the PA. I get fans riled up. I interview drivers on the grid, that kind of thing. I really enjoyed that part of it, as well as some public address at Daytona and Michigan on their big weekends, including the Rolex 24 and the Daytona 500.
That's pretty neat stuff. I had the opportunity for the first time to do PA. I did some PA at Milwaukee, but I actually got to do it at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and it was a lot of fun. But I tell you what, it's a lot of work too. And guys like you and Dean Strome and those guys don't realize how tough it is, especially when you're working the complete day.
Oh yeah, and you've got to have something to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you being at that big stage of Indy and me being at the big stage of Daytona for a number of years, there's a certain, I feel pressure, self-pressure and reverence to the place and what you should be saying, because you're at Indy, you're at Daytona, you know? Takes on a little different meaning for me anyway.
And there are some tricks of the trade, like in, you know, sports radio, whenever there's a long conversation, you just come up, hey, should Pete Rose be in the Hall of Fame? when you're at Indianapolis or something, you can just, if Bobby Unser's around, you just have Bobby Unser on and just ask him a couple questions, and there goes an hour.
For sure.
So, another series you've been working with for quite a few years now, and it's one that's always kind of dear to my heart, because I've always liked this series for stock car race, and that is the ARCA series. And you've been doing TV through the ARCA series for a few years now, and we're getting to see more of it, which I think is great on Fox Sports 1 and also MAV TV.
Yeah, I get the real good fortune of being on pit road for the Fox Sports races this season. I've been in the booth for a few, but more often on pit road. And that includes eight races this year, starting in Daytona two months ago, whatever it is now. And the remaining Fox races dealt me on pit road, but I also was asked by MAV TV, who has picked up the other 12 of the 20 races on ARCA's schedule. They're televising those live, and I'm in the booth for all 12 of those.
And, of course, a lot of changes in the last couple of years with the ARCA series, especially with the carbon fiber bodies and of course, with the crate engines. Tell the fans how that's kind of changed the way the team can go ARCA racing.
Well, the good fortune is Wisconsin is well represented, because Five Star Stock Car Bodies in Twin Lakes makes the composite bodies. It's a 12-panel body that the teams must assemble. So the entire area above the door line would be called the greenhouse. That's one piece of the roof and the windows that we put in. And then there are other panels, so if you hit a door, you can take the door off and put the, you know, replace the door, not replace the whole side of tin. So teams are saving bunches of money in body mounting and sending it to the body guy for any little ding and dent. Matter of fact, when they first introduced this composite body to ARCA in 2015, there was a test at Michigan, and Kevin Sawinski, a Wisconsin three-time ASA champion, knew the composite body from the ASA Stock Car Series days, and his driver hit the wall hard enough to knock the rear end over, and the front bumper got caved in. What Kevin did to fix it, he got out a hairdryer and a hammer and popped that baby back out. So there are tricks of the trade still in use, but those body panels now are being adapted and brought into the Xfinity Series. NASCAR Xfinity Series has them at all the races except for the big super speedways, the plate tracks. So those are certainly something coming to fore, and you know, before you know it, every series will be racing these composite bodies, which saves the guys tons of money. I talked to a five-star representative last week in Nashville. He said Richard Childress Racing will save $2 million, they figured, between all of the cars and all of the fixing they have to do over the course of, you know, this season and next season when these composite bodies are being brought in fully into just the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and he'll save even more when they get the Cup.
Wow. And, of course,
so that body saves a ton of money. You mentioned the engine. I must answer your question fully. That's what I do. The Arca Ilmor 396 is a 396-cubic-inch engine punching out about 700 horsepower, and that engine was designed to last, and it has a really good torque curve, and it has about the same output of horsepower as a built motor. Built motors go for anywhere from $35,000 and $50,000, $60,000 if you go to Daytona with a car engine that needs a restrictor plate. Well, they still choke the motors at the big tracks, but these Arca Ilmor 396 engines are guaranteed for 1,200 miles, should be rebuilt every 1,500 miles. They go for about $35,000 each, but you own the motor. And in just having three motors for the year, these teams are now spending 40 times $320,000 for motors, where in the past they would spend double or triple that based on their engine leases with the engine builders that provided engines for the truck and Xfinity Series. So a huge cost savings there, and they own the engines themselves as well.
And it still remains a way for young drivers to get experience. I think a good example of that, of course, and we know, of course, many of the Wisconsin fans know the family from Eagle River. That's the Decker family and Natalie Decker. And how is she doing so far this year?
Natalie Decker is racing full-time this year. She's 20 years of age. Toyota has a real keen eye on what she's doing. She ran, I think, 7 races last year for Venturini Motorsports, originally from Chicago. She has raced 2 races this year. She has won the pole at Daytona and finished 5th with a left front fender damage, which I thought was very improbable she would actually finish on lead lap because it was a big parachute. So she had a top 5 at Daytona, then to the short track at Nashville Fairgrounds last weekend, and she got the lucky dog at one point in the race and finished on the lead lap at 11th. So I'd say she did a really, really solid job for her first real run, running for points, running for the championship at Nashville this past weekend. So she did really well.
And is it still a decent way for young drivers to come up through the series? I mean, it's great because you get some road course experience. You get, of course, the short tracks, which is very important, and big tracks, but also dirt tracks too.
Yeah, the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards has been around for 65 years. They will always race the 2 1-mile dirt tracks in Illinois, the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, Illinois, in late August, and the DuQuoin, Illinois State Fair near St. Louis on Labor Day weekend. Those are 100-mile races on the dirt tracks, which brings us back to the fairgrounds and how racing really became a national sport, because during the fair, that's when auto racing happened at the horse tracks. So that's still very much a staple. But you see young guys like Justin Haley, who now races in the Truck Series, winning at the dirt track just last year. Never been on a dirt track before and won. I mean, 2 years ago, I think it was. But you've got young drivers coming into the series that are racing heavy cars, radial tires, live pit stops, longer races, and they can race as young as 17 on Kentucky Speedway, Pocono Raceway, Gateway International. And on the short tracks, there's a Sioux Chief Short Track Challenge. That is an 11-race series within the series where anyone age 15 and older can race and ultimately compete on all 11 of those racetracks. Are all those 11 of those races. Salem, Indiana is the next race on the schedule. We might see another 15-year-old win the pole like we did at Nashville, this kid named Chandler Smith winning the pole in his first ARCA race. So there's a lot of youth involved. Toyota's brought their development drivers to the ARCA Racing Series. It's a great series for these kids to learn, and there's a lot of veteran NASCAR crew chiefs, team owners, getting involved in the ARCA Racing Series because they see the value in getting things right for these kids going forward, whether it be for Joggers Racing, Toyota, Ford, what have you.
Well, one thing I like when you're watching, when I'm especially watching you in the pits at an ARCA race, is you know the history of a lot of these guys who are working some of these teams. And you know, like Bill Venturini, who used to run at Milwaukee in the old USAC series back in the early 80s. And even guys like Paul Andrews and Larry Moore, who in the past has worked in the ARCA series. Who are some of the names bouncing around in the garages at an ARCA race that some of the fans might recognize?
Well, you mentioned Paul Andrews. He was Alan Kowicki's championship-winning crew chief in 1992 in the NASCAR Cup Series. Paul has undertaken the role as a general manager for Cunningham Motorsports, and they won the championship 2 years ago at Chase Briscoe, now a teammate of Ty Domajewski's, racing under the Ford banner in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. That team is still there. One of the team full-time guys in the shop actually put a deal together to buy that Cunningham Motorsports team and keep Paul Andrews involved as a crew chief for now Chad Bryant Racing. So Paul is very much a part of what's going on there. You got Ken Schrader involved. He won the championship last year as a team owner. His crew chief, Donnie Richardson, has been around since the 1970s. At one point, he was a crew chief for his brother-in-law, Brett Bodine, in the Cup Series. So there's a lot of history there. The biggest change and challenge really for any team is the MDM Motorsports team. They have been kind of out of the earth like a phoenix rising. They now have Mark McFarland, Shane Huffman, Marty Lindley, Jeff Stankiewicz. They've got guys that have had real, Cully Barraclough. They have been involved in every level of NASCAR National Series, whether it be crew chiefing or tire changing or overseeing an operation. That's all one team. And they have three full-time teams in the ARCA Racing Series. And Harrison Burton, Jeff Burton's son, is racing most of the races as a fourth team for MDM. So they really come on and raise the game for a lot of teams because of their preparation and their ability and their really, really good stuff.
And last weekend we were focusing on Alan Kowicki, and I was mentioning before it was kind of a cleansing of the soul for me because that affected me a lot more than people may realize who knew me, and I never really talked about it. And after 25 years, seeing some of the things that came forward in the last few weeks, kind of said, "Hey, I think I need to talk about this." And one of the things I played yesterday, I had taped the Alan Kowicki at Greenfield High School, and that tape sat in my basement for years and years and years, and I finally got transferred the tape to digital last week. I actually played a portion of it on the show, and who's interviewing Alan Kowicki but a young Jim Tredo?
That was a great day. That was January 24th, 1993. He was talked into coming back home after he won his championship. He was fearful that no one would show up because he spent so much time away from Wisconsin. He even asked my friend and his good buddy, Terry Jeffords, would anybody show up? Well, we have more than 12 people show up at that high school. And Terry assured him, yes, they'll be there. The night prior, he was invited to the Milwaukee Bucks game. And at the time, Jack Gallo was the PA guy that Eric Jensen now does at the court side for the Bucks. And they invited Alan to the game. And they introduced Alan, not at halftime, but 2 minutes to go in the first half. Alan walked out in this satin green jacket that said Bucks across the front. And he was introduced. Jack Gallo actually called me prior to that and said, how do I introduce this guy? Terry said, you should tell me, and I can just sit in the PA. So I bought nosebleed tickets. A couple of my buddies went to the game. And Alan was introduced, and the place went nuts. And as he walked up the aisle, it was like he's running for office. Everyone wanted a piece of him. They wanted to talk to him. They wanted to talk to him. And I think that helped set the tone for what was the next day, thousands of people showing up, not just 12, we're in the thousands, mm-hmm. And Alan's flight kept getting pushed back because he's like, I'll be there for a couple hours. The organizers thought, hey, we've got this pennant string we'll put out for like 45 feet. People just get in line after we do our little stage presentation. And all the while, I'm like, guys, you need a longer line. You need to make sure every gate across the door or the hallways of this high school are open. You need to have your air conditioning on. You need to have your heat on. Whatever the temperature is, it's going to be a big deal. And it sure was.
Yeah, it certainly was. I'll never forget that day. And, yeah, when you're running around the Cup garages in that today, how much does his name come up?
Alan has the crew guys that he worked with, and albeit 17 of them, helped him win the championship versus teams that had 50, 60, 70 guys. Now we're talking about 500 employees at Hendrick Motorsports for four teams. Those guys are still around. Shane Parsnell was a tire changer and worked in the engine shop. He still works at Hendrick in the engine department. He changed tires for Jeff Gordon subsequently after Allen. You've got Peter Jellin, the truck driver, the transport driver that was with Allen through his entire Cup career. He is now working with Toyota Racing Development. He was an engine guy, and he's been working with, an Xfinity team now, or a truck team. He's still around. We mentioned Paul Andrews, very active, and just a couple years ago was working as an Xfinity crew chief as well as running the show at the ARCA Racing two-car team of Cunningham Motorsports, so Paul's still way involved. Danny Glad was the head engine builder. He had fielded an ARCA car with Bo Lamastis driving it last year. I haven't seen them at the track yet this year. He's very much involved in road racing in his home state of Virginia. There's quite a few guys that are still around. Tony Gibson being probably the most notable. Crew chiefing for Kurt Busch last year and winning the Daytona 500 and being a longtime crew member. So there's some core guys there yet. Tom Roberts, the PR guy, I don't see him at the Cup tracks anymore, but up until, I think, 3 years ago, he was very active working with Miller Brewing Company and Team Penske. So there's still some guys there. Now, in terms of Allen's name, it's great to see at Darlington. Tommy Baldwin had the number 7 car the last 2 years in Kowicki colors. And we had the Quincy's paint job on Michael McDowell's car, his throwback scheme at Darlington for Levine Family Racing last year. So there's some really cool ties back to that. The biggest thing that still is a buzz has been the now fourth year of the Kowicki Driver Development Program that Tom Roberts oversees. And getting 7 drivers involved in a program where they earn money and Allen's name, spread the word and spread the love. So I get questions about the Kowicki Driver Development Program myself more than I do about how Allen did things 25 years ago when I'm in the Cup garage.
Well, it's certainly good to hear those guys are around. And like I said, I had Ryan Eversley on, and I thought he did a great job interviewing guys like Peter Jellin and those guys, really, and Tom Roberts, and really, really bringing back the memories of Allen and what he was able to do. And when you think back, you know, it was extraordinary what he was able to accomplish. But then when you know the man and understand him, you can see how it happened, though, can't we?
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. No one believed it, except I did come across a friend that I introduced to Ryan and his co-host, Sean Heckman. When they came to Milwaukee, they spent 3.5 days here talking to people. They had a list of people they wanted to talk to. They had a list of tracks they wanted to go see. I was on their list, and they asked me, hey, would you be around if we have a chance to do lunch or dinner with you, because it's dinner with racers. I said, whatever you need, and you need names, you need photos, do you need stuff, I can help you. They're like, well, we want to get in the Milwaukee Mile. I said, I can help you do that. It might take me a little while, but when do you want to go? Well, we want to be there tomorrow morning about 8 o'clock. You know, that happens. It's going to be where they wanted to get as much as they could in. And the first thing I asked them, I said, why are you guys doing this? They said, we are both huge Allen Quickie fans. So they wanted to make sure it was done right. And they had their notes. The people they told me they were interviewing prior to even talking to me about who else they might want to get was very impressive. And it's a very, very solid tribute, knowing the anniversary of his death, knowing how they went about it. I'm super stoked that I got to be a little part of it, walking down the front stretch of the Milwaukee Mile, what you see on their video portion. And I think I'm in the first of their 4 podcasts. But just the whole idea of giving the awareness for what Allen did and letting people realize, you know, this is, what, 3 generations removed now. Kids that are 15 that knew about him because he won a championship, you know. They don't know who he is. So I think it's a great, great thing they've done, and this will certainly help Kowicki get in the NASCAR Hall of Fame this year.
That's I hope so.
They asked me, what would you want to see out of this, Jim? I said, we need to get Allen in the Hall of Fame.
Yep. And don't forget to follow the hashtag AK4HLF, make sure you check out all the tweets and that, and people endorsing that. It's pretty impressive. And speaking of impressive, Jim, we certainly appreciate the time you spent with us. And look forward to hearing you and seeing you throughout the year in racing.
Sounds good. We'll see you at the track soon. Thanks, guys.
All right. It's Jim Tradel, Fox Sports 1, MAV TV, and we certainly appreciate him spending time on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.
This is Final Inspection with Steve Zocchi, presented by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove on 105.7 FM, The Fan.
And welcome back to the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by the legendary Great Lakes Dragway in Union Grove and David Hobbs Honda. A lot of fun talking to Jim Tradel in the previous segment. I think that was actually the first time I've had him on. Long overdue.
Yeah, he was fantastic.
He is. He's so smooth.
Yeah, he is. You can tell that that he works in TV like butter.
And radio and everything else. He's been doing this for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to suck up to him as much as you.
He started when he was, I think, 22.
Wow.
And we're the same age.
Wow.
Yeah. So he got a young start. He got a big head start over me.
Well, so what?
But
10,
even if
15
he didn't,
years?
He'd still be better than me. I hate to say it, but that's all right. Anyways, we had some penalties again. And we had Chase Elliott having some issues. What would happen to Chase Elliott, Jeff?
Yeah, he loses his crew chief, Alan Gustafson, for 2 weeks, loses 20 points.
It seems like this is happening every week.
Of course it is.
Is it too much? I hear this stuff. I get all these emails and updates from NASCAR and the teams and everything. And I just look at him like, yeah. Okay, again.
Yeah, you know, he basically got busted for the same thing Harvick got busted for with the cucumbered win where the mm-hmm. rear window wasn't rigid and all that. And now he's got to face the music. It's kind of surprising. His car finished 11th.
In the old days, and I know, oh, yeah, there he goes again talking about it's not 1974 anymore. But, I mean, if a car was illegal, I mean, really illegal, not necessarily NASCAR, though, but, I mean, another sanctioning bodies, whatever it was, they would be disqualified.
Yeah.
Out. Especially short tracks. If the car was deemed to be a competitive advantage, they would be docked the win. Now, the biggest... And see, this is... People remember this because it was a big deal. 1983... Richard Petty won the National 500 at Charlotte. It was his win number 199. He had an illegal motor. It was illegal. This thing was a big, big motor, oversized. It was illegal. Everything about it was illegal, and a lot of the people in the pit area were pissed that they let him keep the win. Now, there's two... I kind of agree with this to a point. Bill France, Big Bill, did not want you to go to the race and see Jeff Orlowski in victory lane. Yay, you know, and here's Jeff Jr. and everybody. Yay, okay. And then go home. They didn't want to see then the old man pick up the newspaper either Saturday or Sunday morning or Monday morning. And see, Tiny Lund won the race, not Jeff Orlowski or whoever it was.
Right.
He wanted the winner to win the race. Whoever they saw in victory lane, he wanted to keep the race, even though it didn't happen in 1959 Daytona 500, which was by Johnny Beauchamp, but they actually gave it to Lee Petty. But anyways, he wanted to keep the winner. So what they started to do was penalizing him, points or money. Now, I kind of understand it, but there comes to a point where, okay, is it possibly they're cutting this stuff too thin?
Yeah, they are. And write this date and time down because I'm actually going to agree with Kyle Busch here.
What?
He says that the rule book is so thick and there's so many spec aspects coming to our racing to make everything equal and make sure we have parity between the top and the bottom. He says, I haven't seen much difference between the top and the bottom over the course of the last 10, 15, or even 40 years. He says a lot more, and then he says that he adds that stop this spec game of continuing to go in that direction. I think it's making it worse for all of us and not making it much fun either. And as shocking as it sounds, I agree 100%.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's... Are they cutting things too? I mean, it's you shouldn't be watching the NASCAR on the little NASCAR show on NBC, you know, the NBC Sports Network mm-hmm. or FS1, where, okay, this is who won the race, blah, 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 blah. Okay, now for the last 10 minutes, let's talk about who got penalized, which chief mechanic is out, who's and all this crap. Yeah, fans don't care about that.
When the Packers are done playing at 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, you know where they stand in the standings. With NASCAR, the race ends on Saturday or Sunday, and then you have to wait until Wednesday late afternoon. Some guys, they drop 3, 4, 5 positions, mm-hmm. so you have no idea, and it just makes it more confusing. And in the long run, it makes it more expensive for these teams that they keep claiming that they're trying to save money on. And we talked a couple weeks ago. They take, you know, usually the top three cars back to R&D every week, rip them completely apart, searching for violations, searching to get these guys in trouble. It boggles my mind.
It used to be in the old days they would do that to find, like, remember Godzilla, that Jeff Gordon car you brought to the Winston
yep.
Open at that time, what, 94, whatever it was?
Yeah.
It was a completely illegal car. NASCAR said, wow, that thing's pretty trick. Don't bring it back ever again. Jeff, you did a nice job encapsulating that. So let's end the segment there. And when we come back, we'll talk with Eddie Lapine from RacingNation.com. We'll kind of look at the open wheel scene, what's happening. A lot of stuff happened out in Long Beach. They got like about 5 or 6 series running out in Long Beach. And we'll talk a little F1 too coming up in the next half hour. And then also, don't forget, we got Dennis Michelson, Laurie Monroe from Race Talk Radio. We'll talk a little more NASCAR coming up in the second hour too on the Final Inspection Show, brought to you by Great Lakes Dragway and David Hobbs Honda.